today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Well, I'm Paul, and I play the bass.
It belongs to Paul.
Hi, this is Mike Wagner, and I'm your guest host today for Rockin' the Suburbs. Today, we're going to be talking about Paul McCartney and his role in the Beatles. And before we get started, I'm going to pop a beer. I've got a Ghost in the Machine by Parrish Brewing. I'm not sure where Parrish is at. This is a hazy IPA. If you haven't had it and you can find it, I recommend you try it out. So I will be consuming this as we go along. Nice. So the reason that I chose the topic of Paul McCartney is because you may remember a couple of months ago, Jim and Patrick had a week's worth of episodes counting down the top 15 Beatles songs based on input from Rockin' the Suburbs listeners. Oddly, Paul McCartney only had one song in all of the 15, which was Paperback Writer at number 3. George Harrison had number 2 with While My Guitar Gently Weeps, but the rest were all John songs. And when Jim was mentioning people doing guest spots, he suggested perhaps doing an episode of Paul McCartney's role in the Beatles, since he kind of got diminished in that weeks-long episode. And so I'm a huge Beatles fan. I'm sure I'm not the biggest Beatles fan among all of us, because you can always find somebody who knows more than you. But nonetheless, I thought it would go through and highlight some of Paul's contributions to the Beatles, which cannot be underestimated. The purpose of this episode is really to focus on all the little things that Paul did that added up to so much in the Beatles catalog. He was an incredibly hard worker, which a lot of people don't really understand about Paul, is he constantly added to the other songs, more so than, say, John added to a Paul song or George added to a Paul song. Paul was always adding stuff to all the other songs, and he had a way of nitpicking and pushing to make all their songs that much more spectacular. Now, he could be pushy, and I know that George, in particular, had issues with Paul over the history of the Beatles, but these are things that happen in all bands. One thing that allowed Paul to add so much is he was actually at the studio a lot more than the other Beatles, because he always lived closer. When he was dating Jane Asher in the early part of the Beatles' career, after they moved to London in the early 60s, he lived with the Ashers in central London, a couple of miles from Abbey Road, and then he bought a house in St. John's Wood, which is where Abbey Road is located, and was about a mile from it at that time. And the other Beatles had moved out to the suburbs. And so given Paul's proximity to the studio and his work ethic and his amazing talents, the accumulation of all that is an amazing contribution to an amazing body of work. Now I'm going to focus on a couple specific areas. And the first area is Paul's role as bass player. In the early days, John, George, and Paul were all guitar players, and John's friend from art college, Stu Sutcliffe, was the bass player. Now, he wasn't really a musician. John sort of coaxed him into the band because he wanted to have his friend in the band, but he wasn't really a bass player, and so it came time to decide who was going to be the bass player. And there was no way that it was going to be John that played bass. He just wasn't going to have it. And George was a really excellent guitar player, and so it really just fell to Paul. So Paul got a Hofner violin bass, which he plays to this day, and I'm sure most listeners know what it looks like. And Paul worked incredibly hard at it and tried to give the bass a prominent role. One of the big problems was the recording equipment in those days didn't allow them to really have a very punchy bass sound. And because of having two tracks in early days, or four tracks in sort of the mid period, and when you bounce them, you would lose quality. And to give you an example of that, I've got a version of You Can't Do That, which is a run through from the anthology album. And you'll hear the bass, and it has got some punch to it, even though it was, you know, 64 and they really hadn't perfected bass recording techniques. And then you can hear the final version after things have been bounced and they put the vocals and other stuff on it. So let's have a listen, and you can really hear the difference between the two versions.
A 1, 2, 3, 4. Something to say that might cause you pain. If I catch you talking to that boy again, I'm gonna let you down and leave you flat.
So you can really hear the difference there and how there's not really a lot of punch in the final version on the bass. But they worked at it and Paul worked at it and they finally had a little bit more punch on Rubber Soul. And what I'd like to do for you now is to play a whole series of songs from sort of Rubber Soul forward. They're just snippets of songs, and that kind of focuses on Paul's bass playing and his intricacies and how he added so much to the song. And if you look at the list of songs that were on the top 15, so many of them had Paul's bass playing right there, just really driving the song and really making it an incredible song. So we're going to start with The Word off of Rubber Soul, which he uses his Hofner on. I think that's right. And then I'm going to switch to some other songs in the mid period where he used a Rickenbacker bass and sort of worked on a technique called direct input, where the bass would go directly into the console. I'm not sure of the specifics of it. I'm not sure if they sometimes mixed an amp with it or directed, you know, how all that worked. But I know that they worked on it a lot and the direct input was part of it. And going back to, since he could spend so much time in the studio, he would work with engineers like Jeff Emmerich and other guys like that to perfect that sound. And Jeff Emmerich, in his book, if you read it, he talks about how when Paul recorded with a little help from my friends, they left the bass track open on that one, and he put the bass on at the end, and that's why that's in this montage, and you'll hear how it has a more prominent role, and you can really hear his playing more clearly. So let's have a listen to that selection of songs I put together.
Read my book.
So you can hear Paul had quite a unique melodic style, heavily influenced by Brian Wilson. He wasn't a traditional bass player, but he definitely developed his own style over the years. And as a listener, I always notice Paul's playing, and hopefully that gives you a little insight, or people who are don't listen to the Beatles all the time and wonder what everybody's always on about. That's one of the things. The next area I want to focus on is Paul's role as a backing vocalist in the Beatles. And his main contribution was singing that high harmony above John and sometimes George in various songs. And again, I put together a series of songs to highlight Paul. And if what I'd like for you to listen for is that high vocal that he always sang above, and how he would kind of step back and then step back in and really add punch to the song. And so here's a series of songs, and kind of listen for that high Paul vocal and what he's adding and how dramatic it is and how it really has the ability to take the song to that next level.
Love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. Everybody's green.
John and Paul's voices together are just magic, and I guess that comes from all those years they sang together before they even became famous. One of the amazing things about Paul as a backing vocalist is that he's also a great lead vocalist. But one thing I always thought was interesting about Paul was that I can't think of another singer who sang such great backing vocals that also sang so many incredible lead vocals and number one hits. So that combination is unique. In combination with that, Paul was kind of known as, a balladeer, and, you know, he sang love songs, and he was, you know, kind of a friendly Beatle and all that sort of stuff. But when Paul let loose, he could really well. And I've put together another series of songs. And the reason I put together a series is, like, you can pick a song, but it doesn't sort of give you the full range of everything that he did and, like, how many there are. I think that's one of the things that's hard to remember about the Beatles, is there's so many great, great songs. What I'd like to do with this one is, some of the songs are famous, but some of them are not so famous. And just hear how, when Paul ripped, how great a lead vocalist he was as well. So let's have a listen to this.
You tell lies, thinking I can see. You can't cry, cause you're laughing at me. I'm down. Hey, 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 hey. to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop and I turn and I go for a ride. Till I get to the bottom and I see you again. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know about you, but I think he sings good. So we've talked about Paul's role as a bass player, Paul's role as a backing vocalist, and Paul's role as a lead vocalist, and kind of talked about things where that are a little bit, you know, not known to the public, you know, mostly. I mean, most people, as I said earlier, know Yesterday and Let It Be and all these huge, massive songs. And his role as a songwriter is amazing, and being part of one of the greatest songwriting partnerships of all time, you know, and not only his songs, but his contributions to John's songs. He, again, that's something else he worked really, really hard at. It was Paul that would drive out to John's place in the suburbs when they would work on songs and put them together, and he wrote a lot of songs on those drives. You can hear him tell stories about 8 Days a Week and Hey Jude and a bunch of other songs that he put together in his mind as they went out there, and then him and John would finish them up. And in concert with his growth as a songwriter was also his growth in the studio and overseeing production of Beatles songs and his songs in particular. For example, he came up with all those crazy seagull sounds on Tomorrow Never Knows. And he did this by recording bits of guitar, single guitar, and then taking the tape, cutting it, taking the bits of the tape, flipping them around, and then taping them all together. Most people think John did this, but it was actually Paul. And he famously brought in a string quartet working with George Martin for Yesterday, but I really think it was on Eleanor Rigby where he really mastered that sound.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for?
So after the Beatles finished Revolver, which Eleanor Rigby is on, they did a tour, and then tour in 66 was their last tour, and then they came back into the studio in late 66, November 66, and this would ultimately end up being the sessions for Sgt. Pepper. But the first song Paul brought was a song called Penny Lane, which has amazing intricacies. But adding again to another instrument, I think it's called a piccolo trumpet. I think I heard that's what I heard George Martin call it. But again, this is something else that Paul added, and the amazing sound that he got in Penny Lane. So Paul's bringing in all these amazing instruments and really growing at a rapid rate. And you'll remember he brought in a French horn on For No One. And I think it's the culmination of all that that adds to what becomes A Day in the Life. And we all know the great orchestra buildup, but I always love that orchestra section right before John comes back in with John's vocal. And I always thought that Paul, Paul played a big role in helping George Martin put all that together. And that section I've always just really, really thought was great. So after Sgt. Pepper's, the Beatles made Magical Mystery Tour, where Paul took the lead role on that. That didn't go over well. The movie did not receive good reviews, and Paul was defensive about it. But it's not the greatest Beatles work. But the Beatles continued to make great music. They always made great music. And just a quick word about the production on the White Album, which was after Magical Mystery Tour. I always thought that was Paul's first sort of what we know now as DIY, where he would make songs very quickly, not have a lot of studio flair, and songs like I Will, where he famously, the bass is him going boom, boom. It's him. He's not playing the bass. And I always thought that was like gave you sort of an insight into what he ended up making his first solo album, which he made all by himself in a farm, I think, in Scotland. I think that's where he did it. I don't remember. And although he was really great at production, he could still make these little songs, and they were fantastic. But all things come to an end, and the Beatles close out with Abbey Road, which... Side one is basically John's, and side two is basically Paul's, and George has a standout track on both sides, and for many, it's their favorite album. And before I close out with the last song on that album, which is a Paul song, I would like to thank Jim and Patrick for letting me sit in and do these guest episodes. I've done about 6, 7, or 8 of these now. I really enjoy doing them, and thanks, guys, very much for letting me contribute to the show. It's really fantastic to be part of this great community that you guys have built. And in that spirit, if you guys would like to get a hold of them, you can find them at Suburbs Pod on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And you can call the Suburbs Party Line. You can get all this information on the website at suburbspod.com. There is a newsletter you can sign up for, and if you can, there is a Patreon that you can join and contribute a few dollars every month if you're able to. I know that's greatly appreciated and helps keep the show going, and I encourage you to reach out to the guys and contribute to the show. It's a lot of fun. And so I'm going to close out with the very last Beatles song on the very last Beatles album, excluding Her Majesty, which was Paul's throwing in at the end there. And it's called The End, and it's one of Paul's best lines. And I think it's just magical. And thanks again, and we will talk to you soon.
And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Okay, I've always wanted to try this. Here we go. Number nine. Number nine. Number nine. Okay, let's flip it around. Neanderman. 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 Okay, now let's try it the other way. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Nam dead. That concludes our segment of Mike Has Too Much Time on His Hands.